You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio. Josh Parrish, George Denekian in the studio. Can you believe it? We're together again, mate.
It seems we're joined at the hip, George, each and every Tuesday. I drag you down here in the studio and say, speak into that microphone, George, we need you.
I was about to set off for Kingston Heath because there's a fantastic FFA Cup clash coming up between one of the top NPL teams in Victoria and one of the A-League clubs that really needs to get a move on. I'm talking about Wellington Phoenix, and they've got Mark Rudin, their new coach, who has made a real big fist about how he walked in the club and he realised there are only about 10 players and he had to go and find a whole bunch that would not only stand up in the heat of the A-League competition, but really make an impact for the first time in a long time. And tonight might well be a real indicator as to which way he's going. And more importantly, how well Bentley Greens continues to prepare players to play in meaningful games.
Well, in some ways I've done you a favour, George, because you don't have to brave the wind chill Kingston Heath. You can watch the game from a nice cushy studio here in FNR headquarters. And yep.
Well, that's a very, very good point that you make, but I'm reminded also that they have a fantastic kitchen that was going to offer us all manner of souvlaki, gyros, you know, moussaka, and I was invited to the pre-game entertainment, so I've missed out that too, I think.
Maybe we can take a leaf out of the Fox Sports presenters book
go
Uber Eats. Adam Peacock and Mark Bosnich had a special delivery of chivapi week.
Do you know Murray Shaw hasn't recovered from the shock of watching Uber end up on the desk of Fox Sports? A clever move by the boys. I'm not sure whether Murray is going to pay the bill.
I didn't know you could get Uber Eats from football grounds, but maybe that's the missing link. Maybe local football could take another leap if they could deliver there.
Can you imagine? You know, the Knights have been able to do some magic things at Summer Street, and others have been able to deliver some fantastic food. I'm thinking the boys at Lakeside do a pretty good job. The team at Oakley do a great job. Where were we recently? We went to Olympic Village, and mind you, there were a couple of people who were with me, got the shock of their lives. They didn't realise that a souvlaki could cost as much as $12. I said to them, it's okay. It's worth it. And it was very, very good. But they'll have to review those prices, I think.
It's nothing on, you know, Etihad Stadium or MCG prices, George.
Sorry, does Etihad exist?
Oh, it's a marvel. It's a marvel now,
isn't
it?
That's right. I don't think Etihad was a marvellous place for anything. I'm one of those people that I lost faith with that particular stadium at Docklands after it moved on from Telstra Dome. I did the World Cup Rugby Union at the time. I was the voice of rugby at Telstra Dome. And then when it became, what was that, Etihad? No, I ceased to be involved or want to go. I think the AFL, when they purchased it, that may well have turned me off.
Well, it's not a good stadium for watching a football game, that's for sure.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. I'm thinking I might get a call from Jack Riley very shortly.
Oh, yeah?
In fact, he is calling, so I'm wondering if I've got a moment or two to answer that and come back to you.
Absolutely, George. We do have a huge show coming up for you tonight. The Congress Review Working Group report has been released. This has been many months in the offing. A lot of suspense building with regards to whether or what recommendations the report will make as to the makeup of the proposed new Congress and whether FFA will back these reforms. They've come out with a proposed structure in mind of the A-League clubs, the member federations, a PFA member with 7 votes of their own, and a women's council with 10 members, of whom 3 can be nominated by the PFA, with some of the special interest groups such as the AAFC, coaches, fans groups, being potentially admitted at a later date once they've proved their bona fides, as it were, over the next 2 years. But FFA has fired back with their statement saying that this puts too much power in the hands of the professional game at the expense of grassroots football and would allow the professional clubs to act as a block and dictate the election of directors to the FFA board or veto amendments to the FFA constitution. And it also delivers the PFA a disproportionately greater voting representation than each member of federation. Those are the key tenets outlined in the FFA's opposition. They do back a number of the proposed reforms, but the actual voting makeup has caused some consternation and could well be blocked when the report is tabled on August 20th, with FFA reportedly being key in negotiating for the four of the smaller member federations to block these reforms so that it won't get a 75% majority it needs to pass. So a lot of changes afoot in the Australian game. Make sure you give us a call on 9944 9999. That's 03 in front of that if you're outside of Victoria, or +613 if you're outside of Australia. You can send us a text on 0428 933 345. That's 0428 933 345, or you can tweet us at FNR_radio with your thoughts as to how these proposed reforms will affect the future of the game in Australia, whether FFA should be throwing its support behind them and not delivering this wall of opposition, or whether the FFA has a point and is trying to protect the best interests of the game with the points that they've outlined in their press release. We've got so much still to come on this show. Jack Riley will hopefully be joining us shortly, George. But in the second hour, we're going to hear from Damir Kulash on the FFA Cup fixtures that are coming up. Tonight is, of course, a match day with six games set to be played. A lot of tasty fixtures. Wellington Phoenix versus Bentley Greens, just one of them. And then Damien Davies at about 7:30 is going to give us his wrap of the Aussies abroad, who are in action both in league matches, in qualifiers, and in preseason over the weekend, and also some of the movers and shakers with the A-League, with the Australian players rather, changing clubs abroad. There's plenty of rumours, including Trent Sainsbury potentially making the move over to PSV Eindhoven to link up with former Socceroos assistant coach Mark Van Bommel. That all to come in the second hour, but we do have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking more on the Congress Review Working Group report that debuted today and the recommendations made therein. This is Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. Back soon.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
George Denegan with Josh Parrish and the things you discover on Twitter. I've just been reminded that Tony Tanis's grandfather in Belmore was a big fan of mine way back in the early 1980s. Isn't it nice to know that I was also very, very, very popular, I believe, with some of the grandmothers. But that was a long, 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 long time ago. Oh, it's look, Twitter can be so much fun. It can also be a very important way of discovering and finding out what's happening. Mm. We've had an interesting day. We've been listening and following negotiations going on between Sydney FC and a certain Spanish striker. Mm-hmm. And Alvaro Negredo is a guy who was playing recently at the Besiktas. And we're hearing he's coming closer and closer to being another addition to the A-League for the new season, 2018-2019. Wouldn't that be marvellous?
It would be fantastic. There is some competition for his services, of course. Cardiff
there
City.
There always is.
Cardiff City been linked. Yeah. He had a tough time over in England last time he was there with Middlesbrough. It didn't go to plan for Aitor Karanka's side.
Just remember who he's been playing with, and I said Besiktas for a reason. Where was Bobo?
Mm, he was at Besiktas back in the day.
So they've had a good chat. And there's an awful deal of good support going on. So if it happens, congratulations to Sydney FC. If it doesn't, it's another one of those things that goes on. But our mail, and it's been pretty reliable, the mail we got last year was that a guy called Kevin Muscat would renew his deal, in fact, extend his deal at Victory. And I remember a host of Victory fans got onto me and they said, You trolling us? Stop trolling us, Danikian. And I said, no, that's our mail, and it was 100% on the money. We then suggested that a guy called Honda might be on his way down under and would play for Victory. And they all went, poo-poo, that's not going to happen. It has. So keep poo-pooing, and it just gets more exciting every day.
Unfortunately, Jamie McLaren didn't quite come through.
Well,
you can't be right.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
It's not a bad record, George. We'll see if we can make it 3 out of 4 with Alvaro Negreira. There is still, I believe, $1.4 million left in that FFA/Fox Sports marquee fund that could be utilized for Negreira. The other candidate for that money could be Mathieu Flamini, for going to Brisbane Roar, who isn't the most fashionable name in football, but he is an interesting one given he owns his own chemicals company.
Biochemical company, yeah.
Could be solving climate change.
Well, look, the person who wrote the original story might have been a little bit off the money in that they exaggerated the possibilities. And as Flamini came out, he said, look, we are targeting some of the money that's available in that particular sphere of influence, that is the marketplace. But we're very much small players. We're not, you know, multi-billionaires. But you know what it's like in the Twitter sphere and also in the news world. Until you actually get that story quashed, it just continues to become a viable thing that you whip around. And the more it's used, the bigger a story it becomes.
Yes, I think that one's rather run away from them. But it's probably
it's broken through a couple of gates, and it's like a bull in a china shop.
No doubt being good for their share price.
I had someone say to me, oh, look, he could buy the entire A-League. I said, well, not the case, but it's a good story for a little while.
Just because your company is worth X amount of money doesn't mean you have X amount of money until you
sell it. It's a startup. It's a startup. They're onto something. They're working at it. They'd love to be a big-time player, but it's a long, long, long way from getting anywhere near there or realising some of the monies that were mentioned in that report that was made about Flamini. But look, he was a very, very good footballer. If he was to come, is he fit enough to play, I suppose, in the A-League? The biggest question for people coming to the A-League is that, as we know, it is an awful lot of running. Yeah, the game, the tempo here is fast. It makes up for the lack of technique and quality. So can he still do it? You wouldn't want him to be taking any special biochemicals, would you?
No, of course not. I wouldn't want that to be... but he could be a big-time player over here, even if he's not a big-time player in the biochemicals world.
True,
He made 8 appearances for Getafe last season, which is... top division Spanish club.
Absolutely.
He can certainly still do it. Whether he's the kind of name who you'd want to splash that money on, given that he plays in a defensive midfield role, not necessarily the kind of guy who's going to bang in goals or bring huge crowds to Suncorp.
There is one club that really needs to splash the money or at least make an impact, and that is Melbourne City, especially now that Melbourne Victory have done a terrific job in landing, Honda. Kevin Muscat looked very, very happy, and he says there's more to come. The fans are really jumped on board and bought in, and that's exciting. If I was the chairman of Melbourne Victory, one of the biggest clubs in the country, if not the biggest, I'd be feeling pretty chuffed. But as we know, it's a cyclical game. The ones at the top have to continue to improve. Otherwise, they'll be overtaken by the next crop who are working really, really hard. Melbourne City has 2 spots that it needs to fill, and I know that they're working behind the scenes to get something happening. They play an important game, their first meaningful, kick this year is the FFA Cup, and they're playing in Brisbane against one of the teams that has a fantastic need to always play well against City. Because Johnny Aloisi's the coach, and he never quite—I think he didn't. He certainly didn't leave on the terms that he wanted to.
No.
And in fairness to those who remember, Johnny Aloisi did a lot of good work and never quite got the benefit of that work. He went and found Engelaar, the giant Dutchman, 6'9", and I remember when Engelaar got himself hurt in a game against the Roar, unfortunately, in a pre-season game. And he had to use the hyperbaric chamber at Princes Park he walked into the Carlton boys, saw him as he was getting ready to go in. They all went, wow, what a specimen. They were just, they couldn't believe his physique, and they marvelled at his fitness. And Johnny brought him in, and he also had a young Jonathan Hermano, who was a talisman at the club in those days. And they were both injured for the entire time that Johnny was trying to put them onto the paddock. And he lost a succession of games, or drew, I think it was about 14 games he went without a win. And, of course, the club at that time cut him. And the next week, Von Schip came back. But importantly, Hermano came back and Engelaar came back. And suddenly they went on a 4 or 5 game winning run. And, you know, all that good work by Johnny was never really given a chance to see the light of day.
Talk about making a timed entrance.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Von Schip certainly could do that and did. And well done. And he's doing some good stuff at the moment in the Eredivisie.
Yes, I believe so.
And they've picked up a young Melbourne City boy, Dennis Genreau. And I think he scored, 4 or 5 goals in the first 6 or 7 games.
It's unbelievable the form he's in. He's on loan from Melbourne City. So he could well come back to City next season, or he could make a move to another European club.
Are you surprised that a young player who has talent can fit in some sides and lift?
It depends, I think, on systems a lot and style of play. I think players are probably not given as much time as they deserve to fit into most clubs and most systems. It's a very short-term game that we play. You know, you're out the door after 3 bad games and you're in the bad books and you won't play again till, you know, there's another injury above you. So it doesn't really surprise me. And it also doesn't surprise me that there's another young City player doing well, because they go about things the right way behind the scenes. They have a very strong academy, as we've seen with Arzani, and the big raps on some of the other young boys who are coming through.
Well, I remember the boy that left and went to the Western Sydney Wanderers. And in fact, no sooner had he left the club, he ended up playing for the Wanderers in the grand final of the youth game. Mm. And I'm struggling to remember his surname. John
Roberts?
John Roberts, that's right. And he looked really impressive when he came on. And, of course, he scored it. Typical, he scored a goal against his old club. He looks like he could be another one of these young players who can make an impact.
Yeah, Joey Lynch did a brilliant story on him not too long ago. Looking at striking prospects, which are thin on the ground in Australian football, he could be the kind of big hold-up player that that we need to flourish, because there's so many striking talents who haven't quite fulfilled that potential. One of those being at Brisbane Roar now, Adam Taggart, who I still rate very, very highly if he can get it together.
Nose for goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Under John Aloisi as well, a great striker in his day. Could be.
He might be a finisher for him. In other words, you've got a striker giving another striker a little bit of an insight into how he might tweak his game. That'd be really exciting.
I think it's good for Aloisi to be coaching a young striking prospect rather than sticking with these old blokes who are already learned all there is to know, like Massimo Macaroni. Having Adam Taggart at Brisbane Roar seems to be a key use of Aloisi's, you know, coaching talents and experience. And I'm looking forward to him having a fantastic season this year, because I think it could be on the cards.
And we keep forgetting and not giving enough credit to Aloisi that he played in 3 of the biggest leagues in the world.
Yeah. He's still a hero at Alaves.
Oh, absolutely.
Spain.
Absolutely. Speaking of heroes, what are you making of young Trent Sainsbury? We believe that he's been taken now by Von Bommel.
Yes, I mentioned.
Saw him and spent some time with him in Turkey with the Socceroos.
I mentioned before the break that deal could be in the offing, and Damian Muscovich has come on Twitter and rightly pointed out the deal's already been done, George.
Yeah, the deal's been done.
Official in the last half hour or so, PSV have snapped up Trent Sainsbury.
That's a big move for him.
Yeah, fantastic. He's been on the outer at Jiangsu Suning. I think terminated his own contract with the help of the PFA in the past week because he was frozen out there. So credit to the PFA for helping him move on in his career and getting their advocates behind him. He had nothing bad to say about the club, but just circumstances conspired against him with some of the foreign player restrictions that were brought in during his time.
We're seeing that every day at every league in the world, whether it's Serie A, whether it's La Liga, whether it's the EPL, whether it's the Championship. You've been picked up by one crop of management, no sooner arrive than they decide to sack the coach and bring in a new group. And of course, suddenly you're not wanted, or you can't move.
And he was
We've seen it too often.
He was stuck there for way too long. So it's great to see him make a move somewhere where he's clearly wanted, with a coach in Mark van Bommel who is clearly, he knows him. He's coached him at the Socceroos and he knows what he's all about. It reminds me a little bit of when Gus Hiddink and Johan Niskens were coaching the Socceroos in 06 and they wanted to bring Lucas Neal. Niskens wanted to bring him to Barcelona because he's seen what he could do up close. Van Bommel, in the similar assistant role, another Dutch coach, sees what Sainsbury can really do and he rates him really highly. And I'm glad that Sainsbury has chosen to go with Van Bommel to PSV, a huge club, huge club in European football, where he can
faith
further
on
develop.
Both sides. You've seen faith on the player showing his faith in Van Bommel's selection needs. So he says, I'll come and fill those needs. And at the same time, Van Bommel's seen this young man playing and preparing in a very intense camp in Turkey for those 2 weeks, remember, before the Australians went to Russia. And although they didn't get the rewards they were chasing, they certainly made an impact, especially early against the French and, of course, against the Dutch. The Danish players. The Danish team, I thought we had their measure, and with a bit more poise and finish, we could have got a famous result. Wasn't to be, and of course, Peru got us because I think we're a bit flat, and things didn't quite go the way you wanted. And sometimes just one goal at the wrong time. And I can remember that our keeper, Matty Ryan, just got himself into that strange position where he was blinded by the centre half in front of him and another player running across him. Just as the shot was the player made contact on the shot, and he was blinded. The ball was in the back of the net before he really made a move.
Game of fine margins. Oh. It's tough, but
you don't mind being beaten by a shot that's too good, but you do care very much when you had a chance on it. If only you'd seen it.
Yeah. And that shot by Andre Carrillo, that volley, was sublime. You can't really fault Matt Ryan for that one. Trent Sainsbury, probably the Socceroos' outstanding player over the past few years. His poise at the back, the way he distributes the ball, he's bailed Australia out on many an occasion, especially when they were playing the very attacking system under Ange, and Trent Sainsbury seemed to be called into action at the other end on quite frequent an occasion. He's just an outstanding
player. But he actually warmed to that.
Yeah.
I think the greater demand on his technique and his play, he really enjoyed it.
I think so too. Ange showed a lot of faith in him, playing him in the centre of that three as the key defender. I think he's a future captain of the national team. Whenever Mile Jedinak decides to step away, he will take that leadership role. And he could be a Champions League level player, honestly, with PSV if they can qualify. I think it'd be great to see him play in Europe's premier club competition because a player of his ability deserves more domestic success than he's had in his career thus far.
Absolutely. 100% concur. Tell me, what's the latest with young McLaren? Is he going to go back to Hibs?
That's a done deal, George. He's gone back to Hibernian on loan, on a season-long loan from Darmstadt. Apparently, they were able to put up whatever loan fee Darmstadt were demanding of them. And he's only too happy to rejoin a club where he's already had success in the second half of last season. The fans already love him after he scored 8 goals in 15 games for them.
So are they calling him Macca? We're gone for another Macca.
Following in the footsteps of Scott McDonald, who's got the right name to be successful in Scotland, right, George? But he should be flourishing in Scotland. A little bit unfortunate from a Melbourne Victory fan perspective, that he hasn't decided to come back to the A-League, but probably, if we're honest with ourselves, the best step for his development in his career to stay in Europe at a club where he's had some success and try and push on.
I think continuity is key. He's got to play week in, week out.
And he will at Hibs.
I think you're absolutely right. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, hopefully we'll catch up with some of the key, players who have had a big hand in the game, either as stakeholders or as commentators over the past few years. And one I'm very keen to talk to is Benita Mercedes. Let's see if we can grab her on over the next hour or so.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, George Denikian joining Josh Parrish in the Football Nation Radio studios in Docklands in Victoria. And we're talking about a host of things. And one of the things that has come up and been very much in the news is the working group regarding the work they're putting together in this Congress for football. The Round Ball Code has had an extraordinary past 12 months. There have been so many different things to contend with. And one person who's been right across it, in fact, she's written a book. It's called Whatever It Takes, is someone we know and care for very much, Benita Mercedes, and she joins us from Sydney. Benita, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, George. How are you?
Not too bad at all. How's the book going?
The book's going well, as you said. I mean, Whatever It Takes turned out to be such a perfect title for everything in football.
especially as we know, with your background, you were a big part of the FFA. You know the inner workings. You know the characters at play. You know the egos at play. And the book, let me tell you, gave us an insight. And congratulations. And I'm sure you would have had some interesting letters, tweets, and emails since the release of the book.
Yes, I have. I have indeed, and not so much fan mail in all cases.
Yeah, I bet.
That's to be expected.
So, what have you made of today?
Oh, look, I think it's reform light. I think what
I like
we've
that.
Got
reform light.
I know that some people who are on the Congress Review Working Group, a reform working group, called it normalisation light. So they've given us reform light. And I think it's typical probably of a working group that's getting a compromise rather than actually coming up with the best way forward. The most disappointing aspect from my perspective is that they haven't bitten the bullet and taken the opportunity to really expand the Congress and bring in a whole lot of diverse stakeholder groups. They've really just only expanded it to the groups that they were always talking about.
Benita, it's Josh here, and you speak about reform light. What are some of the reforms that haven't been recommended that you would have liked to see in the report?
Well, I think, as I said, the key one that I just alluded to was around the broader representation on the Congress itself. What they've done essentially, we had two stakeholder groups on the existing Congress, the state member federations and the A-League clubs. Now, that was totally imbalanced because it was 9 votes versus 1 vote. What they've done now is they've expanded it by two stakeholder groups, PFA and women, which were the two that were always being talked about.
And needed to be on board.
Absolutely needed to be on board. But they haven't taken the opportunity to broaden that even further. And if you look at congresses such as, for example, the FA in England or US Soccer or the French Football Federation or the DFB in Germany, they all have much bigger congresses. And, you know, in some cases, for example, in the USA and the UK, they specifically involve, for instance, fans. In the UK and the US, they involve every level of the game, from the elite professional level down to, you know, as low as divisions as they go.
Which we don't have. Our non-professional clubs have got no representation, have they?
No, that's the interesting aspect of this, is that the member federations, they argued at the outset that they represented all of those clubs.
But they don't.
Yet, well, exactly. And you get the formation, the establishment of an organisation, for instance, such as AAFC, who only came into being because they felt as if they weren't being represented. And so you've got, they've been given a little bit of a fast track in
yep.
that the report says they can be a member from July 19. But even this sort of, it's almost a slightly more inclusive but exclusive Congress. So it's broadened, as I said, from two stakeholder groups to four. And from 10 individual members to 29, so that's a good thing, but they still could have gone further.
And we're still talking about a qualification period for those brand new players, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
As long as we're going to give you immediate entrance.
No, and Australia could have been really a leader, a best practice leader in this by allowing some of those other groups on, e.g. coaches.
Yep.
I think, you know, they're an important stakeholder group, referees are, and certainly fans and supporters are as well.
Benita, is there an aspect to which this report is kicking the can down the road to a certain extent? I mean, the recommendation of a national league's working group to be established to tackle some of the more thorny issues seems like sitting on the fence to mine.
I think, yeah, look, they certainly have kicked the can, and to use the wrong football analogy, they've hand-passed it or handballed it. They obviously couldn't come to an agreement, I would expect, in the time frame. Because don't forget, this was supposed to start in around about April, and it actually didn't start until June or July because it took so long even to agree on who the independent chair would be. So to be fair, they've done as well as they can probably in 7 weeks. And, you know, Judith Griggs, who is the chairperson of this committee, has had an unenviable task, and she and the FFA staffer who's worked with her, Tim Holden, have had to work very fast to get to this point.
Does that explain why she hasn't been able to really get out there and talk to some of the people that she needs to?
I think that would
because
be one of the factors.
Because
yes.
She's a top professional. I would have expected, and I don't want to be critical, but I would have expected a little more. But I understand from your perspective that she may well have been under a time pressure, and she's done the best she can in the allotted window. Yes, beautifully said.
Yeah,
is that fair?
I think it's very fair, and I think, you know, she was given a timeline of the 31st of July or else, and I think everybody on that working group was determined to meet that timeline, and that's what she's done. You know, in a sense, I mean, what she has been is a consultant to FIFA in the AFC, and she's been given a task, and the task has a timeline, and she's met that timeline. My understanding is she's going to now present that report to the Member Associations Committee of FIFA on the 20th of August.
Yep.
And I expect that's going to be rubber stamped, and it'll come back to Australia and basically told, yep, we agree with it. We, the Member Associations Committee, agree with this. Now you go ahead and vote on it. And that's where it could all come undone.
Benita, this is starting to sound more and more like the United Nations trying to agree on the framework to which they can establish the committee that will agree on something else. It's the ins and outs of the bureaucracy never cease to amaze me. But the fact that the FIFA sinisterly named Normalisation Committee is looming over all of this makes it a little bit of a rushed process and a pressured one at that.
I think it's even more than the Normalisation Committee potentially, Joss. I think there's potentially, if on September the 7th these recommendations aren't accepted, FIFA could take the drastic step of suspending us. And, you know, if you follow it through logically in terms of what their statutes are and in terms of the process they've gone through, a Normalisation Committee would be the kind option. Because the Normalisation Committee is going to come up basically with the same outcome as what this Normalisation-like committee has. So if they were to really become heavy-handed, it would be suspension, and therefore it would put at risk our participation in tournaments such as the Asian Cup and even the Women's World Cup if it wasn't resolved in that time.
And what would it do to all the contracts that are currently in place? Would they also go by the by?
In terms of the Normalisation Committee, you mean? Or the
No, no, I mean the current contracts. If they were to be suspended, if the FFA was to be suspended by FIFA, all the current contracts that are held in place, how would they stand up?
Yeah, that's a really good question, George. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really answer that definitively, but it is a good question. I mean, there's the contracts with individual staff, there's the contracts with sponsors.
It would be a free-for-all is what I'm suggesting.
Yes, and you know, this is at the end of the day, it could almost be a bit of cat and mouse. Will FIFA go that far? We don't know, but the FFA board and the four, what we have heard of as being the four state federations, is not agreeing with this report, have to weigh up, do they really want to drag football back into the 1960s in that way? Because that's what it comes down to, when we were suspended back in the early 1960s.
Yes, as the Australian Soccer Federation under Jim Baiuti. I remember it only too well, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah, I wish it didn't exist, and I wish it.
And you wish you didn't remember that.
Yeah,
far back.
I wish I didn't remember it. And I don't want to see it again. Is what I'm also implying. I'm very keen to think that we have some people of goodwill who love the game, who truly love the game, and for the good of the game are prepared to do something they haven't done before, and that is be visionary, be bold, and be really brave. And if they talk democracy, bring everyone on board.
Yeah, I think that's right, George. And I think, you know, while I talked earlier about what was disappointing about the report, the good aspects of the report is that the people on the working group did get together with the best will in the world and come up with an agreed set of recommendations. So, I mean, I do think it's incumbent upon the four state federations and FFA, even though they may have a point on some of those issues, it's incumbent upon them to respect the process. And the process that was put in place by FIFA and AFC, and let's not forget that FFA is the governing body that has gone along and shouted out and said FIFA's wonderful now and they've reformed and we're happy with them. So on the one hand, they can't say that they support FIFA and they have done everything right and they support the president, and now say that they don't respect the process that was put in place. I think it was the AAFC who put in a media release last week. It's as if they're not accepting the referee's decision. And, you know, if that was a player in an A-League match who didn't accept a referee's decision like that, they would be banned.
Absolutely, Vanita. What do you make of FFA's objections to the report? Namely, it seems to be a suspicion or a wariness of the PFA being given too much of a say in the Congress.
Yeah, I haven't read their statement closely this evening because I've been tied up with some other issues.
Let me tell you, it'll take you some time. There's about 100 pages to wade through. I just thought I'd give you a warning.
The FFA statement, the key points about it are that they believe it weights votes too heavily towards professional football at the expense of grassroots football. It gives the A-League clubs too much power, and it gives the PFA a disproportionate voting representation as opposed to each member federation.
Yeah, and that's no different to what the discussion has always been. That's why we got to this point in the first place, because individual parties could not agree with what the mix was. Remember, we were talking at some stage about 9-5-3 and all sorts of configurations.
I thought they were my tax lotto numbers.
Basically, what they're saying is much the same thing, that they don't like the balance, how the balance has worked out. What do I think of that? What I said earlier, I think, you know, part of what they're saying I agree with. I do think there needs to be broader representation in the Congress from day one, but this working group has come up with recommendations. The working group worked through a process. We should respect that process. One of the things which I thought was interesting in the recommendations that I did pick up on is, one, those special interest groups do have a, quote, pathway to Congress, so at least that's there. But there's also a recommendation to review the governance model every 4 years, which I think is a great idea, because one of the reasons that we are at this point is because the governance model we have now was really written about in 2001 and 2002.
And we haven't moved on.
Exactly, and it was appropriate for the times then, but 17 or 16 years later, it is time to move on. So to review it every 4 years is not a bad thing. And if everybody, as you said earlier, George, if everybody comes into that with the right objective and the right goal in mind, which is what is best for football, and let's go of their ego and let's go of thinking about their role in football and rather than what's best for football, then we should be able to come to sensible, mature, competent decisions.
I love the way you managed to tie these things together and make us think and think hard and think clearly. I know that you love the game. If you haven't read the book, Whatever It Takes, you've got to go and buy a copy and read it. Bonita, can we talk to you again in a couple of weeks when more of this is going to see the light of day and we've had a little bit more time to absorb what's come out in the 100-odd pages of presentation?
My pleasure. Thank you, George. Thank you, Josh.
Benita Merciard is one of the voices in the Australian game, joining us here on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio, discussing the Congress Review Working Group report that was released today. Huge developments that will dictate the future of who makes the decisions in Australian football. And we welcome your thoughts on 9944 9999 03 in front of that if you're outside of Victoria, or +613 if you're outside of Australia. You can send us a text on 0428 933 45, or tweet us at FNR_radio. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're hoping to speak to Robbie Crame, the chairman of the AAFC, who hasn't been granted an immediate spot on the Congress in the Congress Review Working Group's findings, but who FFA recommends should be given an immediate spot. George, we're going to take a short break, and hopefully Robbie Crame will join us when we come back.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. And we also, I think, we'll hear from one of the NPL club stakeholders, which would be terrific to get another perspective again. You're listening to FNR, Football Nation Radio. This is Evenings with Josh Parrish and George Danikian.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Well, what a day in football. There have been murmuring about various players coming down under to join Honda in the new A-League season. We've been listening to the machinations revolving or surrounding the Congress, which has certainly been taking, I suppose, a lot of oxygen. And making us all think about what is good for the game. And we've managed to catch up with the chair of one of the new stakeholders, the potential stakeholders, the AAFC.
Absolutely. Robbie Crame joins us on the line. How are you, Robbie?
Good, Josh. How are you, George?
I'm delighted to have you on board. Thank you, Robbie. Really appreciate it.
No,
what have you made of all the discussions or the release of the 100-page report?
I think the pleasing aspect that the report's been made public, I think, which is from a transparency perspective, I think everyone who has an interest in what's going on with the Congress discussion can clearly see now what the report's made up of rather than gossip or hearsay. And, you know, I think, which is probably a first for the game, that we've had a detailed report put together that's been released to the public. So in a lot of ways, that's a very positive thing from, you know, from the group to release it. I think what it now goes up to the discussions in relation to why the FFA, they've outlined their concerns. And obviously it's another matter now for the four small federations to work out also why they object to the report.
Robbie, light in the tunnel there for the Australian football family, though, and your particular stakeholders?
Yeah, look, I think what it's shown from where we were 12 months ago, you know, I think Benita early on the radio just mentioned that, you know, we were talking about 9531.
I've taken those numbers down just in case they do work at Tats Lotto.
Yeah, I know. I think it's $78 million tonight.
Now you tell me.
No. But I think the thing is that, you know, does everyone agree with it? No, I think there's things that you agree, disagree. But I think the whole Congress working group was about in February when all the stakeholders got together, when FIFA and AFC were, everyone got together and said, we need to fix this. And out of that, the review group was put together. You know, there was representatives from the member federations, the FFA, the PFA, the A-League clubs, as well as that independent chair. And I think everybody went into those discussions with an open mind that we had to come for a solution on football rather than relying on FIFA to intervene. Ourselves, I mean, obviously we were heavily involved in those discussions and the consultation process. You know, we were given ample opportunity to present, and I think in that report today it showed our representation. Do we agree with some of those things? No, but what we do respect is the way the process was orchestrated, the way we're given the opportunity. And at the end of the day, I think that the review and the recommendations puts football in a far better position than we are today.
So, Robbie, despite all of the drama and the potential intervention of FIFA and so many commentators around Australia saying, why is this distraction happening, that we have to take the eye off the ball in regards to the day-to-day stuff happening in our own country, in our own league, you think there could be a light at the end of the tunnel? You think it could actually be a positive for the Australian game when all's said and done?
Well, I think it will be. I think anyone who's got an interest in football, and you know, everybody who gives up their time and volunteers does it because they believe it, they're doing it for the right reasons. One would hope now that this Congress Working Review, which everyone committed to, and you know, were bound by those, whatever the recommendations were, and everybody had an opportunity to commit and submit their recommendations and get given the opportunity. One would hope that now in the coming weeks that all parties would come to a compromise and agree, because you know, a lot of work's gone through, a lot of goodwill was put together in the last few months to get to where we are. And you know, anyone who's got the interest of football at heart at all levels, whether you agree or disagree with some of it, most importantly, I think it's better than where we are today. And I think the key, I think, which even Benita mentioned earlier, that one of the key recommendations is that there should be a review. You know, we should look at ourselves every 4 years.
Yeah, that's an eye-opener. Yeah, yeah. We haven't had that before, have we?
No. And I think it gives the opportunity, as the game, landscape of the game changes and develops, you can take a look at yourself. And I think, you know, that's been lost in a lot of the commentary today. Now, for ourselves as the AAFC, you know, we're pleasantly, we would like to have a vote on Congress today, but the recommendation gave us a process, and we're happy with that. I mean, we're happy that the ARC, the FFA board, and some of the smaller member federations support us being on Congress straight away. So hopefully that could be part of the compromise that we end up with a seat at Congress as part of this process. But overall, I think, you know, a lot of work happened in a very short space of time. This wasn't a process that took 12 months or 6 months. It was done over 7 weeks. And, you know, to cut through a lot of it and end up in a position, which is completely different to where we were 12 months ago, hats off to everybody who was involved. Is it perfect? No, but it's a long way better, a lot better than where we are today. And I think it can only improve. And in 4 years' time, as we go through those processes, we can reform ourselves and improve where we are. And I think that is the key. There are a lot more people can have a say in the game and a lot more to improve the game. And, you know, I think it's got to be good for football.
We're talking to Robbie Graham, the chair of the AAFC, one of the potential new stakeholders in this new structure that, you know, down the track is starting to coalesce and come together. I would love to see the non-professional clubs get direct representation. I'd like to see the supporters of the various clubs have a supporters group that, you know, can come together and tell the people who run the game how we'd like to, you know, watch our football. There are a lot of active supporters who bring so much energy, and I mean this in the best possible way, not in the silly way that sometimes we've seen them get out of hand. But there are some fantastic supporters who give their all, and during the high summer, when it's about 36, 38 degrees, they go above and beyond for their clubs, and I commend every one of them, men, women, and children, and they deserve representation and support too, don't you think, Robbie?
Look, I agree. I think that anyone who's involved with the game, and you know, without supporters, without fans, we don't have a game.
We get nothing. Yeah.
You know, and those fans come from different sectors. You know, whether it's the mums and dads who go out and support their son and daughter to play on a Saturday or Sunday, to the fan that goes and watch a state league game or a Premier League game or an NPL game. I mean, the fans play a significant part. I think the supporters association have just started to form themselves. I think it's fantastic. We should be encouraging that for them to form and be a voice and have that avenue to be representative of Congress. I think the key is where we are today. If you look, 12 months ago, there was only three stakeholders, the PFA, the A-League clubs, and the member federations. It took the AAFC, when we formed 15 months ago, to bring another stakeholder into the game and say, listen, there's more than just three stakeholders, there's more. And for us, you know, our association form, we've taken a lot of hours been put by a lot of people to get us to where we are. And then out of that, the coaches formed their association, the supporters. And I think what we've seen is that now we're open to the idea there should be more people involved in the game. And I think that's positive. But I think it took, you know, if this had all been resolved 12 months ago, there would only be three stakeholders, PFA, A-League clubs, and the member feds. So I think it's been recognised now that it needs to be broadened. I think the scope is there. Should all those groups have voice? Look, absolutely. That in the ideal world, absolutely. But I think what we've got today is a resolution in a short space of time. I still believe that we should have a voice straight away. Yeah. But we're happy to accept if it means these recommendations can take Congress off the table and then we can move forward and focus on the game. We're happy to accept that because it's in the best interest of football. And that's what matters. And, you know, we'll progress along those lines.
Rabbi, you've come across as very diplomatic and respectful of the process so far, but FFA have come out with some concerns that this proposal from the Congress Review Working Group weights the decision-making too heavily towards professional football. And while it doesn't preclude the likes of yourselves as the AAFC from having a pathway to membership, doesn't grant it from the outset. So I'm sure you you agree with some of the things that FFA have come out with today, but is it worth risking missing the August 20th deadline for the resolution to be passed and risking, as Benita pointed out, suspension from FIFA? Or are you willing to perhaps compromise and perhaps reach a resolution that's not ideal but is a step in the right direction so we can all move forward?
No, I think it's interesting that the FFA have come out and supported the AFC. If you recall, 12 months ago, the FFA didn't want to have anything to do with the AFC.
Correct.
And even as late as 3 months ago or 4 months ago. So I think that, we agree with the FFA on that matter. We agree that we should have a seat at the table. But I think we came into this online in that it's about a compromise and what's best. We put our submissions in. Clearly outlined why we should have a seat at the table. We were consulted. We accepted that this is in the best interest of football. I think the key is it gone too far one way. Well, the interesting part about this opera is that not one group can block. Can have a block vote, and that's good. Could have done a lot more, yeah. But I've got to tell you, we are a lot better today with those recommendations than we were yesterday. And is it perfect? No.
Yeah.
Can it be improved? Absolutely. But remember, 12 months ago, we were nowhere.
Yeah, it was like it was like a black void. Rabbi, the thing that interests me is the way you're talking suggests that we're almost getting a chance to lead the horse to water, but it's key that we actually make it drink.
Oh, absolutely, George. I think it's important that I would hope that in the coming weeks that with the issues that are at hand, both the FFA and the small and the other member federations have put up, there could be some sort of further discussion to come to common ground in the interest of the game. Because I don't believe anyone involved in football wants to come that mid-September when there is an EGM and know what those recommendations got knocked out, because no one knows the outcome of that. I think as Benita touched on, whether it's normalisation or whether it's FIFA intervention or suspension. No one wants that. So I think we're better off accepting what we have, agree on a compromise, and let the game develop and let us learn from our past mistakes. And people forget. For the first time in those recommendations is we can review ourselves in 4 years' time, which has never happened before.
Well, Rabbi, I love the positivity. Thank you so much. You've been very generous with your time. And will you be willing to catch up with us again in a couple of weeks once the August 20th date passes and we know what our future is?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that's been lost in all this is the progress work that we've done on the second division. Mm. We're a long way ahead now in the discussions and progression. I think, I think that was also discussed with the Congress Working Group, but we've made significant inroads to what I believe, and we've got all the stakeholders involved in the need for a second division, and we're a lot closer than most people think. So I'm sure we could have another discussion about the second division, because I'm sure your listeners want to know how far we've progressed with that.
Oh, look, that's key. In fact, I want to talk to one of the presidents of one of the NPL clubs to get a sense of how they feel about today and some of the report, and what the chances are of, or how much closer we are to seeing a second division up and running with promotion relegation in this country.
George, I think the second division is when it's going to happen. It's not if it's going to happen.
That's super exciting.
I think a lot of people, when you, 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting with every stakeholder in the game, and they've all agreed that we need a second division, and we've further enhanced our financial modelling. And I think what you're going to find in the coming weeks will be going out with expressions of interest to clubs who are interested in a second division to bring them into a working group to run through the modelling with them. I think what the whole plan is to have a strong consultation process before we go out and formally invite people into the process. So stay tuned, but I think it's a matter of when. It's not if, George.
Well, make sure you reach out to us at FNR because we've been working very, very hard for the last 10 months to make sure that there are a lot of good reasons why a million people have sampled us since we began. And I think if you have that sort of listenership, it's worth coming back and talking to us about what's going on next.
George, absolutely. And like I said, I think the second division NPL, most importantly, the reform process, what it leads, hopefully, and that's one of the key things to the AFC, is lower fees for kids. Because
Fantastic.
If we don't do that, we've missed everything that we started for. So second
Touché.
Division, revise NPL, and lower the cost for kids to play the elite level of football because it's not acceptable at the moment.
Rabbi, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for your time. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks, George. Talk later.
Rabbi Crahan, the chairman of the AAFC, just at the end there, a tidbit on the promotion and relegation.
He got excited, and that was he gave us something to really enjoy to savour there, and that is super encouraging. You know, I've listened to Benita now. I've listened to Rabbi, and let's hear from another couple of voices. If you want to talk to us about, you know, what's happened today and what you've made of the report, by all means, reach out to us at 99944999. That's FNR. We've been making reasonable headway, you know, getting across as many of the controversial elements in this particular report. And very, very shortly, we're going to reach out and catch up with the president of one of the NPL clubs, one of the key players who wants to be in the new A-League when it's expanded.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, we're talking football and the round of 32, of course, continues right across Australia. Brisbane Roar taking on Melbourne City tonight. Northcote City taking on Devonport Strikers. That's at the Venator Club. The Gold Coast Knights taking on the Newcastle Jets at Cbus Super Stadium. We've got the Bentley Greens, where I was supposed to be before you called me, Josh, taking on Wellington Phoenix. I was looking forward to seeing what this game is all about and also to enjoy the kitchen there at Kingston Heath. But Bentley Greens taking on Wellington Phoenix. And, of course, we mustn't forget what's happening in Perth. Perth Glory taking on Melbourne Victory.
That's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
I mean, Victory.
No Honda yet.
No Honda. He doesn't arrive
until
next week. I don't think he's going to play his first game until the very start of the A-League season. The derby in round one, George.
Oh, did you have to bring that up? Oh, Kevin Muscat is going to be like a Cheshire cat. You know, there'll be 59,000 people squeezing into the marvellous stadium. Are they calling it Marvel?
I think they will be by that point.
Oh, yeah, okay. Marvel Stadium. I'll tell you what. If anything, let's just break the record attendance knock everybody for six with an outstanding opening round derby victory with Honda. Okay, on Melbourne City. You know what? It would be wonderful if we could just one up them or two up them. Yeah, all right. Okay, so give us a call. Tell me what you think. I know there are some people dying to. Hey, listen, we've had a chance to talk to Benita Masniadis, who's written a fabulous book called Whatever It Takes, and we've discussed the Congress and the report issued today. We caught up with the chair of the AAFC, Rabbi Crahan, and he gave us an opportunity to listen to some. From his perspective, he sees light at the end of the tunnel. Mm. And it may not be just straight away, but 6 months from now, he sees room to move. And he left us with a tidbit, something really exciting, that a second division is definitely on the way.
Mm.
And I can remember when I first became president of South Melbourne 100 years ago, that we felt like, you know, lonely, like a shag on a rock. And we thought there's no future. But we did the best we could. And, you know, one of the guys who was with me at the time is now the president of South Melbourne. And his name is Leo Thanasakis. And I can say to Leo, one, good evening, mate. Welcome to FNR. But more importantly, there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's room, buddy. There's an opportunity for South Melbourne to be part of the big time again.
Absolutely, George. That's fantastic news today. The light is definitely shining through in the football landscape. So some exciting times coming up.
Leo, if I said to you, you've got the deal, you're part of the new expansion plans. Have you got someone you can go to straight away, a partner with an investment opportunity to come in and take the club to the next level?
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of work in the background since the expansion documentation came through, and we've been overwhelmed with the financial support in the footballing community, both domestic and internationally. So we've been very strong in that space, and we believe that the new South Melbourne that is bidding for the license is going to be pretty much one of the very well-backed clubs in the A-League.
So what you're saying to me is that unlike the times when we were together on the board at South Melbourne, things have improved immeasurably.
Well, it's funny, over the last 15 years, we've obviously built some strong foundations at the club. You were there at Ground Zero.
And, Ground Zero felt like it too.
We had no lease, we had no ground, we had no team. But 15 years or so later, we have a $700 million redeveloped stadium with a long-term lease with some great income streams. We've got a fantastic government support, and we have over 100,000 social media followers. And the club couldn't be in better hands at the moment, in the better space. It's probably being out of the A-League for so long has probably done us some good in terms of we've had to realign and reassess the business, and we've grown up as a club, and now we're definitely ready to take on and challenge for the title and take on our fifth title and make sure we get there before Melbourne Victory gets there. So,
and you're probably going to tell me now that you actually have function rooms where you can hold a grand final party should you be in the position to claim a title.
Yeah, we've been fortunate enough now with the help of government to redevelop the social club down in South Melbourne with a new 250-seater social club and a futsal court that could fit another 500 people if we wanted to. So we've got plenty of room for celebrations, and we've got the banquet centre upstairs at Lakeside. So we are the most complete, ready team to come into the A-League by a country mile. So really looking forward to the next couple of months.
That's great to hear, Leo. It's Josh here, by the way. And South Melbourne is in a kind of unique position amongst Australian clubs because you guys have to straddle the divide between the semi-professional NPL clubs and the aspirant A-League bidders. So you're almost got a foot in both camps in some respects. Tell me, do you think there's enough of a voice for NPL clubs in Australia currently?
I think the AAFC has done an amazing job in such a short space of time to give the NPL a voice in the footballing landscape. And yet we represent 130 clubs and over 30,000 participants from juniors. So we're a big stakeholder, which in many ways never got a voice via the federations because their job's enormous as it is to look after community football, and so we sort of got lost in the transition there. But now with the AAFC, we have a really dynamic group of individuals that represent us in each of the states, and I have no doubt that the NPL's voice has been heard long and hard in the in the boardrooms there of discussions with the FFA and FIFA, and that's why I think the second division has been ramped up, because there's a understanding, a clear understanding now that there's a lot of NPL clubs that are able to grow into bigger clubs and morph into A-League clubs eventually, as given the right conditions. So, you know, South Melbourne's very much a model club in terms of how it can transition from an NPL to a full-time professional club, which is set the standards there. And I have no doubt there's a half a dozen to a dozen clubs around the country that, given the right conditions, can transition into super clubs and take on any A-League outfit.
Leo, just listening to you talk again about the aspirations of South Melbourne, I'm just getting a feeling that George has given you free rein, and you're welcome now. You're welcoming the idea of travelling around Australia playing football and representing South Melbourne.
Yeah, I think she's sick of us going to suburban ground, and she's given me the license to
roam,
to go interstate. Yeah, she's very keen on making some trips to Perth, what we used to in the good old days, and to Brisbane. Yeah, so the good thing about South Melbourne is that it still has a very strong brand and following, in particular interstate. In Adelaide and New South Wales, all those areas where it's left some long-standing memories to the fans there. So I think the feedback that we've been getting from all the interstate supporters and clubs, that they really welcome South Melbourne coming back into the A-League, because it's a known brand to them. They really want to see some clubs that from the NSL days make it into the A-League and be successful from day one.
Leo, obviously the prime objective and the ideal solution for South Melbourne fans and the board in general would be for South to be granted the A-League license straight off the bat with one of the expansion teams. But should that not be possible, would South be willing to entertain the prospect of being part of a national second division and gaining promotion to the A-League?
Absolutely. Our position has always been that we want to make it to the top level, either by promotion and relegation from the tier that we're in into the A-League, yep, or via direct expansion. And if we're not successful, we will obviously push harder for the entry into the second division. That gives us a mechanism to go to the top. And I think that should be one of the criteria for all the 10 aspirants for the A-League license currently, that they should be prepared, win or lose, to join a second division and work its way through that way. Otherwise, they shouldn't be in there, because it disappoints me that here that some expansion or some entity or non-entities are only there if they're going to be in the A-League and they won't commit to a second tier or start at another level. Football, you got to work hard at getting to the top, and if it means starting from the second tier, we'll do that as a club, because that's what we're in it for. Whereas other clubs or other entities aren't prepared to do that. So I think everyone should be committed to the second division. Doesn't matter who you are.
Sounds like fighting words from the president of the South Melbourne FC. And I'd expect nothing less, Leo.
Well, there's no bigger joy in football when you watch it overseas, where the ecstasy of making it to the into the EPL or City A or into the La Liga, the ecstasy from that division into the next, and that's the beauty of football. And there's got to be some pain as well of either not making it or you're getting relegated to that division, right? That's the beauty of football. You know, we're in the NPL at the moment, you know, and we've been in a relegation dogfight from day one. But you know what? That makes you harder and more resilient as a club, and everyone is accountable. If we're going to breed mediocrity and not punish people for bad performances, we're never gonna improve as a footballing country.
I love your thinking. I love your aspirations, my boy. Let you recount one of the best moments in your life. At least that's what you told me at the time. I think it still rates as pretty high. I'm going to take you back to Brazil. I think the year is the early 2000s, and you're there as part of the South Melbourne Consortium to represent Oceania as the team to represent them in what was a fantastic World Club Championship. And you said to me, I think it was the game against...
Vasco
da Gama. Can you remember what you said? You remember what you told me at the time? Best feeling you've ever had?
It was an amazing feeling at half time in a packed 80,000 stadium at the Maracanã. And South Melbourne was 0-0 at the time, and we were giving them some curry there. And it took them to the 76th minute mark, and, you know, a world class goal from Edmundo and Felipe to get him through. And we had the plaudits of FIFA and Sepp Blatter, who took a risk on the World Club Championships, and the whole of the Brazilian sort of nation who saw South Melbourne play those days. It just made you feel proud as an Australian, representing football of that day. And there's no reason why, you know, we couldn't be back there again, in the Asian Champions League. And, you know, because once you've been there, you know, you aspire to get there again. And I think every club should have the opportunity to have that amazing feeling and represent their country.
Leo, I love the passion. I love the ambition. Thank you so much for joining us on FNR Football Nation Radio. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks, boys, and good luck. Cheers.
Thanks, Leo. The president of South Melbourne FC. And as you heard, not only an aspirant to be part of the A-League expansion, but should there be a second division, and there's one coming, they're prepared to put their hand up and say, we're going to be there. Because they want to be in the top league one way or the other.
And he's laid the marker down to all of the other bids. He's saying,
get involved.
If you don't want to be in a second division, if you only care about the top division, then you don't have enough skin in the game, mate. get out while you still can.
Yeah, well, that's why he's president of South Melbourne.
We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Damir Kulash about the FFA Cup clashes, really on the eve of kickoff now, George, here on Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio. So much still to come. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Hasn't been a bad evening on Football Nation Radio, Josh Parrish. We've covered an awful lot of ground.
We've had the pleasure of the company of Benito Merciardis, Rabbi Crame, the president of South Melbourne.
And a fired up one,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, Leo Athanasakis.
Yes, and Leo's saying to all and sundry, if you want to be part of the A-League in the future, you shouldn't be afraid to get there by winning your way there through a national second division with promotion relegation.
Yeah, absolutely. He's laid down a marker, George.
He did, didn't he? And it must be in fluoro because everyone can see it now.
for sure.
Now, have we had a chance? Are we going to get up to talk FFA Cup? Because the round of 32 continues, and you promised me Damir Kulash.
And I've delivered him, George. He's on the line right now, our favourite all-rounder, Damir Kulash, my Mundial Memories co-host, the writer for many publications, including These Football Times, The Corner Flag, and Goal.com. Damir, how are you going?
Pretty good, thanks, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really, really good, Damir. Such has been the momentous events in Australian football. We haven't got around to discussing the FFA Cup until it's just kicked off.
But, yeah, it has literally kicked off.
But Bentley Greens versus Wellington Phoenix, we've tipped this one for a few weeks now as the potential upset. Do you agree?
The banana skin?
I think when you look at all the member federations and NPL teams / A-League ties, this is probably the most winnable game. I mean, Wellington Phoenix are obviously quite early in their pre-season. They've also had a new coach appointment, Mark Rudin. There has been significant player turnover, and we've seen those types of conditions being helpful before in helping NPL clubs defeat A-League clubs, whether it was the first so-called cup set in 2014 with Adelaide City beating the Western Sydney Wanderers, or 2 years later with the likes of Gully and Redland United defeating the Central Coast Mariners and Adelaide United respectively to Blacktown's victory against Central Coast Mariners last year. There definitely is scope for an upset. Also, and I must mention Heidelberg's win against Perth Glory last season. Bentley Greens, I guess, have had some passive form of late in NPL Victoria, but I think they've had one eye firmly on this fixture as a potential winnable clash. Their previous fixtures against A-League opposition haven't been fruitful. If you remember back to season one of the competition, they did lose 3-0 to the Perth Glory, but that was by the semi-final stage. So at that point, Perth were heavily in their into their pre-season. I think the A-League season had kicked off a number of weeks before that. So generally, if there's a time to do it, it is now.
Damien, can I ask you, you've watched the Cup from its inception. Is it now starting to be the national cup, the national knockout cup competition that you wanted it to be? Or would you like to see some more changes to make it even more competitive?
Look, I think that what's been prevalent in the last few years is that these NPL clubs are improving, but they are improving to a point. So when they get to the end of their seasons, when the A-League teams have either commenced their respective campaigns or are weeks away from doing so, it can be quite difficult for them to compete. You even saw last year yourself with South Melbourne's clash against Sydney FC.
Yeah.
Just how difficult it was for South Melbourne, who were, 3-4 weeks out of their regular season. It does take a toll on clubs, and I think one of the proposed changes that the FA should look into is whether they could ensure that the final is played earlier, maybe even as a curtain raiser to the season, a week before the campaign starts. A bit similar to what we see overseas with Super Cups. Obviously, yes, that is it. It is quite difficult, and those NPL clubs do have particularly successful ones, do have quite a heavy congested calendar at that point of the year. But at the same time, I think that is one way in which I think it'll be more likely to see an NPL club reach the final, because the way that competition is currently formatted, you're guaranteed to have one NPL club reach the semi-final, and that is a feel-good story. But by the time they do play an A-League club, they're completely spent, and the golfing class is evident.
Not only that, the players normally from the NPL club have had to come back from holidays or cut their holiday or their wedding short to actually turn up to play in the final.
Yeah, and
that's asking an awful lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and also the financial strain that it does put in a lot of clubs, because they can't afford to pay the players out of season. And one of the other things that I suppose has been mentioned before by countless coaches in the NPL is the fact that, you know, they are restricted to only 2 foreigners, 2 imports.
That's a good point.
In terms of their squad, while A-League clubs do have, 5 foreigners to choose from. So generally, you even see in these types of games, if there is a golfing class, the foreigners proliferate that. And we see that a number of teams over the years have gotten away with wins in the FA Cup against NPL opposition. This is A-League teams, by the way, thanks to their foreigners. So I think that if it were limited to 2 foreigners, it would make it much fairer.
Yeah, and that's well very interesting. I like
calendar
that.
A bit.
No, good point. The thing that I'm really excited about is that I can remember we were part of the Fox coverage when the FFA Cup was opened up and made available. We've just seen a brilliant save by the Bentley Greens keeper, and it's gone over for a corner with Wellington pressing. And these are the opening 5 minutes of this game between Wellington and Bentley Greens at Kingston Heath. But I'm just reminded once again that in the early days of the announcement, the FFA Cup, we had about 600 teams prepared to put their hand up. Now it's close to nearly 800 teams across Australia, Damir, who want to be part of the action.
Yeah, and why wouldn't you? I mean, look, what we see in terms of round of 32, we only see 22 state member federation NPL sides make it out of, what, 800 plus. But even those ones that don't make it, that are playing in, you know, the lower fringes of state league football, whether it's at a state league 3, 4, 5 level, it does provide them a great incentive, and also some great coverage in the early rounds. And I think that the FA Cup has done remarkably well over the past year or two in terms of promoting those early FA Cup qualifying rounds. And I know it's been a while since we saw a team do what South Springvale did in season one and really emerge out of nowhere to be on that national round of 32. I guess you could say Guelph Croatia is the closest that we've had this season, given that they are a club from outside of Western Australia's top flight who have made an impact on the competition. But I think that it has contributed to heavier investment, heightened coverage of the NPL and the state leagues. And I think that all round, it has brought the football community closer together. But at the same time, raised to surface a lot of the pressing concerns that these clubs do have regarding the state of football in the country and where we'll be in 5-10 years' time. I think that because of the FA Cup, we have had such a growing consensus for a national second division pro rel in the future and A-League expansion, because we've seen, you know, it was only 3 years ago that we saw Heidelberg play Melbourne City Olympic Village and get a 12K crowd. Those types of scenes is something that I haven't experienced in my lifetime. And I think that, George, you would be old enough to remember Olympic Village in its heyday.
Go easy. Go easy, Damir. You're right. You're right. I do remember. Yeah. And they were wonderful times. And they can be wonderful again. It just needs more vision. It needs a complete understanding. I want to see a real understanding from council. Because I was at Olympic Village only last week, and I sat there and I you know how you ponder with this, you know, the players get injured and you're sitting there looking. I saw the people who had turned out. It was a beautiful, a cold night at Olympic Village, and I thought to myself, now if a progressive council could make that a boutique stadium, or they could sell the ground to the club and let them make it a boutique stadium, and what you have then is a viable facility that can be used, in 50 different ways. You don't have to hold a council back or a community back. You give them a bit of rope and you let them loose and do something super. I know it's a little too visionary perhaps for some people, but I just thought to myself, I could be sitting here and we could have a really beautiful boutique 10,000 or 12,000 stadium. And it would be magical. It would be exciting. It would be comfortable. You could bring the whole family in. Not only have something to eat, but sit down and have the kids mix with the rest of the family. I think it's exciting stuff.
I'm going to jump in there, Damir, before you answer.
There have been some goals.
Before you comment on that one, because we have some score updates. Newcastle Jets have taken the lead away to Gold Coast Knights. Nikolai Topper-Stanley on the score sheet after 11 minutes.
Yeah, you got a header on board.
The Tasmanians, Devonport City, have taken the lead over Northcote City. 2-0 now. Miles Barnard, the striker for Devonport, scoring twice on 12 and on 15 minutes. So they're off to a flyer over in Northcote. But Damir, what do you think about the George's proposal of getting more boutique stadiums at this level?
100% behind it. I think it was last year that you guys had, or it might have even been earlier this year, you had John Didlitzer on your show, and he did speak about that we've had sort of a generational gap in terms of the development of football stadiums across the country. And I think that is quite evident in Victoria. You look at Olympic Village, yes, there have been some upgrades done over the last decade or so, but it's minimal compared to how heavily invested a lot of other sporting facilities are across the country. And I think that you'd hope to see, particularly in Victoria, I mean, we haven't got a lot of, I suppose, boutique rectangular stadiums because they do have the advantage of a rugby league being capable of being played on them. Can house not only the home club, Heidelberg United, but can take hosting rights for the early rounds of the FA Cup. Imagine having an entire weekend of games non-stop and the immense financial possibilities that also brings to the home club, who has invested a lot of money into improving and upgrading that stadium. I think if you look at it now, while Lakeside Stadium is still the pinnacle of Victorian State League football, I suppose you'd love to see Knights Stadium enter a new phase of redevelopment, and also a lot of the other clubs, for example, where Northcote City are playing tonight, David Barrows Stadium, I'd love to see that stand that they do have actually have seats on it. That are, by seats, I mean... Sorry, I've just lost my train of thought. But,
no, you're talking about seating at those grounds.
Can I just
interrupt you there, Demir? The thought that that rushed across me while I was sitting there watching this game last week at Olympic Village was, I know there's a the old running track, which was part of the Olympic Games preparation back in '56. And everyone was telling me at the time that, you know, there are serious considerations there from the various bodies who want to retain this for posterity and all this. I'm thinking, you know what? You do a fabulous video, yeah, with all the latest technology, and you tell the story of what this ground was and what it brought and how it was used. You put that in the vault, and it can be on a loop running at the ground on the wall there for the, you know, for every guest who comes. And what you do is you make it a boutique stadium. You take the track away. You bring the stands, you know, right round the entire ground. And that could become another sensational facility along the lines of what they have at Lakeside. And remember, the Lakeside Stadium, they spent about $70, $80 million. Now, that money came on board because of two things, the Centre of Excellence and the fact that Athletics Victoria needed a new home close to where they were at Olympic Park because the AFL, you know, found a way to grab Olympic Park, which was, in my opinion, absolutely shocking because that was the Olympic precinct. How dare you do that? Well, they did it. And, of course, Victoria Athletics needed a new home, and that's why Lakeside came to be the platform. And it's turned out fantastically well for all involved. Could be better because you could put some more seating. I've spoken to Leo about you could put more seating behind the both goals and it'd be even more exciting. Can you imagine doing the same thing at Heidelberg and Olympic Village?
Yeah, and I guess as good as Lakeside Stadium is, the one of the downsides of it is that it's not a boutique rectangular stadium that only accommodates football in terms of you don't feel as close to the action as you would at maybe at other grounds. And I think that Heidelberg is another club where that is a problem, where the viewing experience is tempered by that fact. So I think that generally there is a great desire from all those involved at Heidelberg United and other clubs within that area to significantly improve that facility. There has been work that has taken place over the last few years to do so, but I'm in agreement with you, George, that I think that it needs to be a state-of-the-art redeveloped boutique football stadium that is able to host games year in, year out, because at the moment Heidelberg United particularly during the course of the winter months, really does struggle to ensure that ground is up to tip-top quality. And I would like to see the same extended to Melbourne Knights and the stadium that they do have at Summer Street, and also a venue in the eastern, northeastern suburbs of Melbourne in the Veneto Club up
the Veneto Club Stadium. You know, Dummy, as you were talking, I just kept thinking to myself, Summer Street. I remember taking South Melbourne to Summer Street to play an absolutely incredible, incredibly competitive game. We were down 1-0 early, then we went down 2-0 early, and then the boys came back and we won 3-2 in the last possible moment. And that can be as gripping and as exciting a venue as you want to make it. And the fans there demand a good game. They're enormously supportive. And you imagine if those facilities were to improve or be given an opportunity to improve, that kitchen down there could do roaring business more than just once a week.
Yeah, it is another common theme, I guess. If I was in the shoes of someone at the Victorian government, I guess the thing that you can say to play devil's advocate, well, is there really a need to divert that much resources and money for stadiums that are at the moment in up to standard, and also that don't, I guess, house many attendances over the course of a campaign. But I guess all that will change if, say, clubs like Melbourne Knights, clubs like Heidelberg United, not only are regulars at the FA Cup, but also if we do get a national second division, a second tier going in the next 5 or so years that they're a part of, you'd obviously need those stadiums to be up to the quality of the 21st century now.
Absolutely.
That isn't dividing either of those two clubs, because I think that particularly when you look at Melbourne Knights and what they were able to achieve in the late 80s with the building of that stadium and how they did it, and how it was one of the first of its kind in Australian football, I think it's a remarkable achievement. But you'd hope that as time goes on, that these clubs can move forward, progress, and yes, they have been put, I guess, in a marginalised position where they are in the periphery of their existence. But at the same time, going back to what we started this conversation on, the FA Cup has given them their time in the spotlight. And wouldn't it be great if that extends onto a continuous basis across a league campaign?
Can you imagine a Mark Viduka stand?
Yeah,
at Summer Street,
roaring like back in the old days. Yeah.
And even having Mark come in and cut the ribbon to open the stand, wouldn't that be exciting?
Yeah, it would be quite an achievement. I guess they already do have the stand up there and the bar that they have named after him. Of course, they did receive quite a substantial financial injection off the back of his subsequent transfers once he left the club. But overall, I think that with the FA Cup, it has ensured that these clubs, you do experience their time of relevance, and that they continue to be relevant in Australian football. And hopefully we will see more and more of them in the future with a national second division hopefully on the horizon. I know expansion has been confirmed, but there is, I guess, a heavy impetus for a market there for these clubs to be brought back into the national spotlight on a permanent basis, not on a semi-occasional, semi-regular basis like they are currently.
Well, Dimir, you've given us a lot of food for thought. This FFA Cup has given us a window into football at that level, facilities and the involvement of these clubs in the Australian game. We will have to let you go, but thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
No worries, Josh and George. Might I also add that next Tuesday we'll be having the Mundial Memories retrospective of the 2018 World Cup, if I can give an early promotion to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, can't wait for that, Damir. I'll be looking forward to recording that with you next week.
No worries. See you guys.
Good on you, Damir.
Damir, cool ass.
You know, it's even more important that we're actually talking about it. I think not only is it exciting that the FFA Cup has opened at the aspirations and the dreams of a whole new crop of players and clubs and administrators and fans and volunteers. But, each and every year the competition gets bigger and more exciting and more intense. And the reason is because we all clamour for it. We want competition. It's what drives us, isn't it? You want to be the best you can be in whatever field of endeavour. And in sporting terms, you heard from Leo Thanasakis. He wants a winning outfit, and he wants to drive, the goals of that club to finally be able, after 15 years in the wilderness, get an opportunity to come back and be a player again, whether it be as a regular in a national second division or as one of the new entitled aspirants in the expanded A-League. That's there to be seen.
Exciting times. In the FFA Cup, Devonport City lead Northcote City 2-0. Newcastle Jets lead Gold Coast Knights 1-0 away from home. Bentley Greens and Wellington is still 0-0. And Brisbane Roar and Melbourne City is still 0-0. Perth Glory versus Melbourne Victory to kick off at 8:30 p.m. alongside Hellenic Athletic from the Northern Territory against Western Sydney Wanderers kicking off at the same time. But we are joined now by Damien Davies. We're going to have to rattle through this pretty quickly, George, but it's an Aussies Abroad wrap with our favourite Aussies Abroad expert, Damien, who joins us on the line now. How are you, Damien?
Very well, guys. And you?
All right, we're fantastic, mate. I want to start with the confirmed transfer as we head towards the window slamming shut. It always slams shut. It never closes, softly and gently. But Trent Sainsbury going to PSV.
Yeah, I saw that one about an hour ago. That's fantastic news. Everyone was starting to get a little bit anxious, and obviously he got his release sorted out with the PFA from China during the week. So it was just a case of time until this happened, and I think PSV, and I think it's a three-year deal. It's, it's a long term, so I think it's great for him. Great league, great club. He's under Van Bommel, which is fantastic. Ticks all the boxes. I haven't gone through and had a look at what their defensive lineup is at the moment. I'm assuming he's going to be there or thereabouts to walk into a starting lineup after he has a mini preseason now, given they kick off next week, I believe. Ticks all the boxes for me. I think it's a great move.
Fantastic. And we've got some breaking news coming through. George is pointing me in the direction of his Twitter feed.
Damien, you'll love this. Central Coast Mariners have confirmed Usain Bolt will train with the club, but it does not guarantee a professional deal.
Right. Okay.
So it's on.
I was happy with the Honda deal. Just quietly. Usain Bolt can come if he wants.
Not so much enthusiasm.
I thought the only problem was the fact that someone wanted to pay him $900,000. Mm. I'm saying if you're going to come and want to train and earn your way on, good luck. I don't have a problem with whoever it is, but to actually pay them to come, almost as they do with the golfers, as they used to do, you're going to come and play in the Australian Open. Oh, we're going to guarantee you $300,000 for your flight down under. Now that's not competitive.
No,
but this is.
This definitely is. I think it's still a PR stunt, but at least they're not shelling out for him. The other breaking news in the last 10 minutes while we've been talking, George, Joe Hart joining Burnley on a 2-year deal.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he's no longer down the pecking order at City. He's going to be replacing Nick Pope, I believe, between the sticks for Burnley. But let's return to our Aussies making moves abroad. What have you got for us, Damien?
So the first one is an apology. Last week you asked me about Jack Duncan, and I steered you in the wrong direction.
Yes, you said Al Nassr.
Yeah, and that ended up being Brad Jones. So they were obviously chasing a keeper, but the wrong one's around. So Jack and Brad both got over to Saudi Arabia last week, which is great. Jamie McLaren finally got his loan deal to Hibs and made his debut on the weekend. Also sensational, a year loan there for him, which is good news. Two of our younger boys, Jacob Iliopoulos, I'm sure I've pronounced that wrong, George, you'll correct me, has gone to Assel in Cyprus, and By Antonio has gone to Alki, also in Cyprus in the top league there. And one probably person that will be dropping off our Aussies Abroad and has been talked about a lot over the years is Scott McDonald. He has decided to retire and has started a career as a pundit for BBC in Scotland. So congratulations to him.
Punditry is dangerous too.
He's got his head screwed on right, George. Scott McDonald is one of the most intelligent footballers I've ever interviewed. I think he'll do marvellously well. And more breaking news, Damien, I keep interrupting you, but Bentley Greens, they've taken the lead against Wellington Phoenix in the FFA Cup. Jankovic on the score sheet after 23 minutes there, so potentially an upset on the cards.
All happening. So the with Sainsbury jumping off the list in the last hour or so, there's two more that we're looking at. One is Brad Smith, who is rumoured to be on trial at Seattle Sounders in the US at the moment, and Azani. And that story's evolved a little bit over the week as well, with Celtic seemingly odds on to sign him this week. So with a bit of luck, next time you jump in with breaking news, it'll be about Azani.
Scoring a goal, that'd be great.
And there have been a few Aussies involved in continental tournaments, I believe.
Yeah. So European tournament starting, maybe Champions League. There's a couple of Aussies in action during the week. Awar Mabil was a youth sub for his team in Denmark, who were eliminated from their qualification, unfortunately. Yaganek started against Evan Alexander Ridley, who is playing for a Lithuanian team, who they were successful, so they progress, which is good for Milos. Celtic also played against Rosenberg, with Rogic being a used sub and Alex Gersbach also making an appearance in that game. But Rosenberg were eliminated, so Celtic progress. In Europa, there was a few Aussies that were involved. Dani Vukovic's club, Genk, progressed. James Holland at LASK in Austria, they progressed. Geniao in AEK in Cyprus progressed. And Ascroft in Balazan in Malta were eliminated, unfortunately. So a couple of Aussies there. And in the Asian AFC Cup, an all-Aussie scoring event with Cirrus in Philippines playing Home United from Singapore, with Blake Powell and Zaka Cernak both getting on the scoreboard in a 1-1 draw. Good for our Aussies.
Absolutely. Blake Powell and Zaka Cernak, too. A-League names from, it seems like years gone by, Damien. I wonder if Cernak will complete the journey and make it to all 10 A-League clubs, because he seems to have made it more than halfway through by now.
I think this is about his 10th Asian club, just quietly. He's been in Thailand and Singapore, Indonesia, I believe. He's been all over the place.
Just wants to get his passport stamped.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a passport.
Yes, that's possibly the case.
Well, Damien, we have run out of time, unfortunately. We'll have to get you on later in the week for a fuller wrap of all of the Aussies playing overseas. But thank you very much for coming on again and being so informative about all the action. There's just too much going on for us to cover it all at once.
Well, the transfer window is about to close, as we said, and a lot of the European leagues are up and running again now. So we'll get back to the action on the pitch next week and start cheering our boys on as we get towards the Asian Cup squad announcements later in the year.
Spot on. Top stuff, Damien. Thank you for your time.
No worries, guys. Have a good night.
Damien Davies giving us a little bit of insight into the Aussies in action around Europe and in action signing contracts here and there, George.
And speaking of having fun, Bentley Greens continuing to have fun at Kingston Heath. They, as you said, they're leading 1-0, and they've only just missed another opportunity to add to that scoreline. So Wellington Phoenix, under pressure, Mark Rudin's first meaningful hit out, under threat at the moment.
Mm. They're up 1-0 after 28 minutes. George, I'm going to let you go. Maybe you can scuttle on over to Kingston Heath and catch the second half. But that has been our show for today here on FNR Evenings. We must thank all of our guests for joining us during the 2 hours. A real momentous day in Australian football, and it's only going to get bigger and better with A-League ticking closer. FFA Cup tonight, the Congress Review Working Group proposal tabled on August 20th, and so much more still happening in Europe.
Still waiting for Sydney to give us the tick on Negredo.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.